Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
Hello, my name is Rahasia of Rahasia Uncensored, on the Spiritual Activist Radio Show, which is on BBS Radio. That's bbsradio.com/spiritualactivist. Reason it's spiritual is because, I don't know, I seem to think that most of our problems are a lack of spiritual consciousness, because I've seen a lot of people in this world that have turned their lives around simply by becoming conscious and conscientious. And having a conscience, because some of the things that we've done in the past we can no longer do once we develop a consciousness and a responsibility for our brothers and sisters out here in the world. Today we're going to be interviewing a really good friend of mine, Daryl Piero of Sonari Smart. I've seen him develop his product line over the past few years, and I'll let him get into it, but just to tell you a little bit about who Daryl is. How can I put this? I think the best representation of people like Daryl and many other people I know, maybe myself included, is I remember interviewing Bruce Lipton. And of all the things that Bruce Lipton has ever told me, which has been a lot, we've talked in depth about different things like the global brain and how everything is built on plateaus and we're heading towards a one consciousness and all that. But the thing that he told me that really stands out is when he told me about imaginal cells. I can't even impress on you the importance of this either. Imaginal cells is something that biologists know all too well. They actually call them imaginal cells. But the analogy of a caterpillar becoming a butterfly, just hold that in mind. And that's usually where we stop. We use that as a transformational process of coming from one level of consciousness or being to another level. But the part that escapes most people is actually the most important part. It's when the caterpillar, for some unknown reason, has this thing in its being, and it has no idea why it's doing it. Why in this world would it pull itself up into some low-hanging branch upside down and spin a chrysalis around itself and basically kill itself, dismantle itself, right down to the cellular molecules that makes it up? Why would that happen? It's built into nature. And something that happens in that chrysalis, in that chaos, if you break it up and it's just a bunch of goop, doesn't look like it's would ever become anything, because it's the caterpillar. Everything that was a caterpillar has broken down. It's gone. But what biologists have found out is inside that chrysalis, inside that goop, that chaos, there are specific cells, imaginal cells, specific cells that hold the pattern of what that caterpillar is to become. The caterpillar has no idea. It doesn't even, it's beyond its wildest imaginations to be able to someday, instead of be crawling along the ground, to be able to fly off into this other realm. The imaginal cells holds that pattern. And within that pattern lies the ability to form and pull together all of the molecules and cells that was once a caterpillar. And now they know that the other cells congregate around the imaginal cells, and that's it sends the data, the download, the genetic download into the other cells on what it is to become, the wings, the legs, or whatever. And then it turns into a butterfly and flies off into another form of existence. The reason I'm telling you this is because we have imaginal selves on this planet, and they're called specific human beings. And within these human beings, I like to think of myself as one of those, because I do have a glimpse, an idea of what we can become, and it's not based on anything that we've been. It's something totally new. But within these planetary cells, these planetary imaginal cells, lies the pattern of not only what we can become, but what we can do with our lives. And I see Daryl as one of these kinds of people. He has a vision of what can become. What can we do with so much of this, what's happening with this medical marijuana? There are specific ways to guide this. And I think he's onto something with the extraction method and everything else. I think you're going to enjoy this guy. He's an inventor, a visionary, a pilot. I'm not too sure there's not too much that he hasn't tried and done and actually succeeded at. He has a place here in Chico, California. It's a big warehouse where he has set up his lab. And I really think you're going to enjoy this guy. And believe me, listen closely, because there's a lot of data that he's coming out with, especially if you are a hemp grower. If you're growing hemp, you better listen, and listen really, really carefully, because Daryl's right on the cutting edge of changing the way that, as a hemp grower, you're going to make a lot more money and have a lot more control over your lives. And his method requires a lot less energy. Everything from extraction to drying to transportation, everything. This is what I mean about imaginal cells. It's thinking out of the box. And let's come up with ways that we can survive this. Because let's all face it. I've been in groups of people where there's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, doesn't matter how many people. And I ask them to raise their hand if they sense that something is on the horizon, looming over us, that's going to be coming at us, that we need to really be prepared. Almost everybody raises their hand. But then when I ask them, how many of you have a solution? Hardly any of them raises their hand. But I'm telling you, the solution is inside of us. And maybe I'll play a quick little thing at the end of this by a man named Osho that I think you'll enjoy. All right, let's see what Daryl has to say. So how are you doing today, Daryl?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Rahasia?
I'm doing very, very good. I think a good way to start this out is tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got started down this path.
Okay. I left high school in the late 70s, and I ended up going into the Air Force, where I was trained as a computer technician. Like many people back then, I experimented with drugs in high school, and I had smoked some cannabis then, but of course, what we had then was nowhere near as strong as what we've got now. And so over the years, off and on, I had dabbled in cannabis, but my career has been in the computer industry and the technology industry. So it's always been part of my interest to stay up on technology. So over the years, probably up until about 10 years ago, I always believed that the medicinal cannabis was just so that people could get high, right? I mean, I didn't really believe, oh yeah, you know, I smoked pot, and as it got stronger, of course, it was more prevalent as time went on. Now we become where we are now, total legality in most states, and the research being done has given us a lot more insights as to what this plant actually does for us.
So, you know, you're talking about the legality. You know more about this than I do, but this thing started out as being medical marijuana. That's sort of what got the ball rolling.
Sure.
But is the government now backtracking on that and wanting to call it recreational?
Well, you know, the state governments, sure. The recreational stuff comes in the various states. I'm not sure how many there are now, but the feds, it's still illegal federally, of course. I think that's going to be changing, especially with the new hemp laws, because they've opened a Pandora's box with that, in that most hemp species look exactly like the cannabis plant. In reality, in the world of botany, it is a cannabis plant. It's a cannabis sativa. So,
but it just doesn't have the THC?
Very low THC, 0.3% or less is the definition of hemp versus cannabis.
And a good percentage for THC is what, 15-17%?
Sure. Even up in the 20s now for THC, you can get them over 30, I've heard of.
The most I've ever grown
was a 27%.
You're talking about the early days and how much it's so much stronger now. It reminds me of the old days, Acapulco Gold or something.
Oh, yeah.
you had seeds and stems, and you had to shake out all the seeds.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You had to smoke at least a joint, you know?
Sure.
I think I got high a lot just off of breathing a lot, you know? But now, you know, one or two hits, and you're like, it's a definitely a different depth of high.
Sure. It's much more concentrated now. And then with these dabs and shatter and all the different forms of it that you can get, the vape pens. I mean, those vape pens. You got to be really careful, especially if you're drinking alcohol. You mix those two, and it can be pretty scary.
Right.
You know, give you the spins and stuff. So it's just like any other. Controlled substance, if you will, like alcohol, you have to be responsible, you know?
Which is why they're controlled, because people are not real good at controlling themselves, you know? That's something I've learned in life. If I can't control myself, there are agencies out there waiting in line
to control you.
To control you.
Yeah.
And actually put you in physical places to help that control system out.
Sure.
Whether it's an insane asylum, if you're acting all crazy, or if it gets into the illegal thing, you know, prisons and everything else.
Right.
But control and taking responsibility is, I think, something a lot of people are starting to come to grips with now, because they're seeing that we live in a society that's out of control on so many levels, a government that's not taking any responsibility for any of their actions. And I tell people, you know, they say, well, there's no justice in the world. I say, well, there is, but we have to learn how to spell it. It's just us.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, once you get down to the fact that it's just us, you know. And I just watching a thing from Osho today. He was talking about how there is a battle between the mind and the heart. And the mind, we've let it take over and become the master, when in reality it's supposed to be a servant.
Right.
And the heart is supposed to be the master. But the heart, having nothing to prove, because it knows intrinsically that it is the master, it is just latent there and sitting, and we have to bring that out. And it just reminds me of, if you change the word mind for government, corporate entities, military, that's the mind. And we've let them become the master when they should be the servant.
Sure.
And the people are actually the heart. And that is where all the power is. And what the conflict is the mind, the government, whoever we're talking about, they know on a deep level that they have no power whatsoever, except the power that the heart and the people lets them have. And inside of us, at any time, we can claim our God-given right of heart energy and become the master of our lives. And that just, it freaks out our mind. And then it starts throwing us entertainment and blah, 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 and trying to get us confused, because it's always in fear of being undermined, you know?
Right. Okay.
This is what I was talking about. We're probably going to get off on a few other tracks.
Yeah, but that's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to keep in mind, because what you're doing right now, and what a lot of people are doing, we're on like the cutting edge of society starting to transition into something else.
Right. Well, you know, the interesting thing that I found about the cannabis industry, we're talking about THC now. And of course, I got into the THC market at a young age. I used to you know, sell, buy and sell cannabis as a sideline to get some extra money. I started about 10 years ago to make an olive oil. I figured since I'm right here close to Corning, which is got some of the best olive oil in the world, that I could buy, you know, a good olive oil in bulk and then infuse it with cannabis, with THC cannabis, and then sell it as a edible into the dispensaries. This was my original plan. And so I produced several versions of the THC-infused cannabis oil and never really took it to market. I ran into some issues where I would give it to friends, and I discovered that maybe you would try some and it wouldn't do anything to you, and then somebody else would try it, and the next thing I know, they're curled up in the fetal position, high as a kite, right? So I started researching even more, and like I said, this was 8 or 10 years ago, and I discovered something called the endocannabinoid system, the ECS, which is a physiological system that all mammals have in it. Now, this system was never taught to us in school, even though it was discovered in 1992, I believe.
This is something that our body produces and has?
Well, our body has a physiological system with receptors in our body that actually communicate with the cannabinoids that are in cannabis. So it got me going off on a different tangent and looking into the CBD market, because CBD was being talked about a little bit back then. But what I discovered is that our bodies, all mammals, have this ECS. And our bodies actually produce molecules that are in the same class of molecules as cannabinoids. So if you go back to, you know, 10th grade science biology class, and you remember how they categorize molecules by size, and so we have classifications, there's like terpenoids, okay? Terpenoids are all the molecules that have taste or smell. So if you can smell it or taste it, it's a terpenoid. And there's subclasses within the terpenoids, like flavonoids. Flavonoids are ones that have taste more so than smell.
Do they have psychoactive?
They don't have any psychoactive properties in the terpenoids, but they've been used in ancient Chinese medicine for thousands of years. B-chirophyllene, beta-mycerine, pinene. So pinene is one that gives the smell to pine trees. And so if it smells like pine, which some cannabis does, because cannabis typically is high in pinene, alpha pinene, it's also high in B-chirophyllene, which is another one that has proven to kill cancer cells in some studies out there.
My God, it kills cancer.
Oh, yeah, we don't even go down that rabbit hole. So I got real intrigued by these different molecules and started doing research. And because of the fact that, like I said earlier, where someone, it would affect one person one way and another person another way, I really didn't want to continue to produce an edible that I didn't know what it was going to do to the person that takes it.
Right.
It just didn't seem like the right thing to do. And so I kind of got into looking at the cancer fighting side of it for a while, because my brother-in-law was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And so we did, my sister, she mostly did some therapies with essential oils, taking he had this pain right in his side and a pain in his shoulder, and no matter what they gave him, he couldn't get the pain to go away. And so I just said to him, well, try rubbing some of my olive oil on it, just out of curiosity. And he wouldn't eat it or he wouldn't smoke cannabis because He didn't smoke it, and he didn't think that he, he didn't agree with cannabis. He was old school, redneck, I called him. So, but he would rub it on, and he called me 3 days later and was just blown away how it had taken away the pain. So I started looking at the topical side of it, and then also at the same time looking into the testing and how to test this stuff. Because if you could test it and you knew what the content was, at least you would know how strong it is in THC, and you could judge a bit more on what it did to people. And I also saw that coming down the market, the testing was going to be key to all of these products through the legalization process. And so my original plan after the olive oil was to build a lab. Which I in fact did do at one point, and mass spectrometers and liquid chromatographs, all this high-tech scientific equipment. And since I've been in the technology business all my life, I've bought and sold many different types of used technology. It's the best way to learn it because I always learn what I sell. And so I started buying and selling this equipment to get good prices on it, and I buy it at auctions. And I was buying in Agilent 1100 HPLCs, which is one of the big ones that they use in the testing world out there now. And of course, what ended up happening is that it was a lot more complex than I thought it was going to be. And we ended up hiring a scientist for a while. But the expense just became too much. And so I was looking at the topical world at the same time. So that's when we came out with our two, our original formula and our sport formula in our topical world, for arthritis. And it's a CBD lotion. Originally we started with a THC lotion, and due to the legalities, and also the limited research on CBD at the time, I decided it was safer to go after a CBD market. This was probably 6 years ago, because we're producing a product that won't get anybody high and that is not being ingested. I didn't want to have to deal with the federal laws, and I thought I was safer in that position.
Well, that alone would get you through a lot of doors that you normally would have conflict with. Even some of the old timers and old school people, it doesn't get you high. Well, here, I'll try it,
Right. Yeah. And it opened up a lot of an older sector market. We have a lot of people, senior citizens that use our products and they love it. I have found through the years with the topical lotions that it seems to work better with people, for people with chronic illness. That have fibromyalgia and arthritis and those kinds of things. Lupus really helps with the lupus pain, those kinds of things. More recently, we've added tinctures to our list. We have a lip balm now, and we're going to be adding a sunscreen. We are doing laboratory work because to produce this stuff, of course, we're always looking at what's out there technology-wise. And to take CBD biomass, which now is legal nationwide, federally as well, because back in December of 18, the federal government passed the Farm Bill, which legalized the growing of hemp again. Now, as I said before, hemp is cannabis sativa with very low THC. And that's why I said earlier that they've kind of opened a Pandora's box, because we're growing thousands of acres of hemp now.
And this is the same kind of hemp that could be used in the textile industries too?
Yes.
That's another industry that you're up against the pharmaceutical.
Right.
Government interest, textile. I mean, I think between medical marijuana, CBD, and all this, and stem cell research, I think for the first time, I can see the pharmaceutical industry quivering a little bit, because their writing is on the wall.
the writing certainly is on the wall, and they should be quivering. I mean, I agree with you that that's why, to be honest with you, I was a bit surprised that the hemp bill, that even made it through in the farm bill, the hemp provision, because it gives a big problem to the police of the world, of the United States, because it looks, smells, and tastes like cannabis, like any other cannabis. Mm-hmm. There's been guys getting busted and having their crops seized by the police when they get pulled over going interstate. We actually got pulled over. My partner got pulled over and had 100 pounds. It was actually 85 pounds of hemp, legal hemp, up in Oregon seized. They wrote him a ticket and told him they were going to charge him with a felony. We had to hire an attorney. We got the attorney to go in, and she got it thrown out because we provided test results that it was third-party test results that it was less than 0.3% THC. Of course, the police up in Oregon didn't believe us, and so they got it tested themselves, and it came in under 0.3% THC, and they had to give it back to us. We collected it last week,
yeah,
and got all 85 pounds back. But they fought us tooth and nail. They did not want to give it back, and it took about 6 months to do, but we got it back.
Once you get involved with law enforcement and they get entrenched, it's hard to get them to back up from that.
No doubt. And they're all, they've had it beat in their head, you know, like everyone else in America, that that cannabis is bad and that it's a gateway drug and that it's going to lead to heroin and all this, which is a bunch of BS. They're actually using it to cure alcoholism, and we have people that are using our tinctures to get off of pharmaceutical drugs, and so, you know, there is definite medicinal value here, and the research is just beginning to happen. We're going back to the class of molecules and the cannabinoids. I've read different things from different websites and different reports, but there are anywhere from claims of 88 different cannabinoids up to 140 different cannabinoids in cannabis within these molecule classes. So we know about CBD. The next most researched ones are probably CBN, CBG, CBC, cannabigerol, CBG, and I don't remember all the other ones, but they all have pain-relieving properties of the ones that we've researched, and they get lesser in content, meaning CBD and THC are the two highest molecule density in most cannabis plants. And so that's what we have the most availability to test with.
You know, when it's going to break wide open, I think, is usually technology, once it hits the universities and they start getting grants,
right,
for these young minds to do thesis on it, really get into the research, everything sort of goes crazy from that point on.
Yeah,
and that's where it's going to come down, when the people that give away grants start giving away grants for the research and all this.
Which from what I hear, has already been going on. I had thought about trying to find some of that research money myself, as far as that goes. We haven't gotten to there yet. But yeah, there's been a lot of research done by the Israelis. The Israelis are way ahead of us, and believe it or not, the English. The English have had an underground cannabis research facility going for probably at least 20 years. They were the first ones. The Scottish actually were the first ones to come up with a legal cannabis drug. In fact, it's the only legal cannabis drug in the United States right now. For epileptic seizures, and it basically uses CBD. Our tincture would probably do the same thing that this does if you get it in high enough concentration.
Yeah, just talking like this, it actually blows my mind when I stop to think, because we know people all over the world, you know, South America and
right.
Europe.
Right, yeah.
And we are so backward here. You know, listening on the news about a month and a half ago, the mayor of Dallas made it a law that you can steal up to $750 worth of merchandise, and you're not breaking the law if you get out of the store and you get home with it. Well, if they catch you, then you have to give it back, but they can't arrest you.
Oh, boy.
And they asked the mayor, what are you thinking? You know, like all the merchandise stores, they're going, what do you think's going to happen? There's going to be whole hordes of people getting together, and they can steal up to $750 and get out the store.
Right.
You know, it has gone crazy, you know. And the reason he said that he did this was the way the laws are unfair to poor people. And I'm thinking, my God, you know, what is this coming to? Seattle, the mayor of Seattle, they made it legal. You can have any drug up to 3 grams. And their reasoning is, as well, that way we're not going to have to be busting all the homeless people constantly. And because they barely spend a night in jail, but the police are saying, what, you've effectively made drugs legal. Because the dealers stand off in the distance with their big bag.
Right.
And they send their little dealers out there with 3 grams or less. And if they get busted, they just lose a little bit. Something has to give. I mean, I think this is what happens when cultures clash and something's trying to evolve forward.
Sure.
It just creates so much friction because you're trying to do something based upon old learning, old laws, and old paradigms, and it just doesn't work. And little by little, they start breaking down, and new minds come up with new ways, but then you're fighting with the old regiment, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we have a major homeless and addiction problem in America right now. I mean, I was just up at a hemp show in Portland, Oregon, and I thought Chico had a lot of homeless. Portland, there was camps, you know, tent cities everywhere along the freeways. And most of these people are addicts and mental patients.
Yeah.
And we have no mental services or addiction services, or very little, to actually help these people. So instead, all you're doing by making laws like that is enabling them to continue on down their path, which is a path to destruction, basically.
Yeah, and there's other people doing rehabilitation that actually does work, you know.
Sure.
It takes time, but it's like one-tenth the cost of incarceration and all the legal system.
Absolutely.
And, you know, then they could go out and, you know, have time to arrest real criminals.
Right.
Well, people that are robbing and pillaging and plundering.
Yeah, and I've always said the federal government, I mean, if you look at our federal government, we have the highest incarceration rate per capita than any other free world country. So we're in a country that is supposedly the freest country on earth, and yet we have the most people in jail.
Yeah, I think the statistics are is we have 1/4 of the global population, but 25% of the incarcerated people.
Right.
Globally.
And we've turned it into a for-profit organization is basically what we're doing, okay?
Prison industries,
that's right. And you can go back and you can look at Unicor. Unicor was started by some politicians down in Texas years ago, and that's a for-profit organization. And GSA is mandated to buy, I think, 5% of their stuff through Unicor, so it's kind of like prison labor, and they're paying these guys $1.20 an hour or something to produce desks, and they do the harnesses for the M1 tanks, wiring harnesses for the M1 tanks. There's a lot of different things that we've taken and turned our prison population into a labor force. I think that a lot of these prisons, especially the minimum security prisons, would be better off turned into rehab centers instead of prisons, right? I mean, you go into prison these days and they talk about rehabilitation. Well, there is zero rehabilitation in prison. It used to be that prisoners could get Pell Grants and had education within the prison system where the
you could take college courses within the prison system and better yourself so that when you did come out, that you could change your ways, right? And so along the way, we've eliminated most all of those programs. I do believe they still have a drug rehab program in there, the DAP program with the feds, which is a good program and I'm sure has helped many people. But we need programs that also pick up the people out on the streets, the homeless people and these mental people that have just been dumped there and have no family or friends to help them. So,
you know, this part of the conversation is definitely a slippery slope, because some of the people that's going to be watching this are going to people that want to get involved, you know?
Right.
And the market is so all over the map, you know? It would be nice to explain exactly where you're coming from and exactly how somebody, what kind of a person would come to you and where can they plug in to make sense. And also, if we could talk more about Sonari Smart.
Right. Okay, well, we have a couple of different avenues for people to be involved, okay? One is with Sonari Smart, we produce products. We produce end-user products. So we have topical lotions, tinctures, we have a lip balm, we have soap and sunscreen in R&D right now that are coming out soon, a couple more lotions. We're doing a couple of lotions that are for anti-aging as well. The thing about Sonari is it's not just CBD, it's cannabis with the entourage effect, which has more than just CBD, CBN. It has other molecules in it as well as essential oils. And we take and produce, we have formulas for it that have a lot of different things in it, okay? So not just CBD for pain, there's other molecules in there that are for pain as well. So if somebody wants to get involved with that, we have distributorships. You can go to our website and sign up to be a distributor. And what that really does is it gets you a 50% discount off of our list price, and then you can resell it and make money on it. We have a lot of people doing that now. We're in stores. We're in New Earth Market here in town. We're in some dispensaries. We're in several doctor's offices. We have doctors recommending it to their patients. We have people who go out and do farmers markets, and they have booths set up at farmers markets, and so they buy from us. So, and we're soliciting as many people to do that as we can.
Yeah, we should talk a little bit more too. I'm involved with Doctors Against Disease.
Right.
And so far we've come up with a couple of products. And the idea is to take all the money that a person would normally spend on pharmaceuticals with all the side effects and start using alternative health products. You know, that might be something that you'd find a place to plug in, because they're getting doctors all over the place that are starting to put these products in their office.
Right.
To give people a choice, you know, instead of, like, there's this one product, I forget the name of it, but it takes the place of aspirin and Tylenol and all of that, you know, and it's a good little product.
Sure.
With no side effects.
Yeah, I mean, any of those kind of things we can get into, we want to do. I mean, I would suggest you go to our website and sign up for our mailer. We do a weekly mailing with discounts. You can go in and get one of our marketing kits, which has samples, so you can try our products and price lists. And we have free shipping on all our products. So if you do become a distributor, or if you just go buy from our website, it's free shipping. And so, you know, we're actively working different channels right now. I have some people down in Texas working on getting into nail salons. We're in a couple of nail salons here in Chico, old folks' homes, those kinds of things. And that's with Sonari Smart products. Now, the other thing that we're doing was from this hemp show. I have another a partner involved with the hardware side of the business and the extraction side, which is Moxie Labs out of Oregon. And Moxie Labs and Sonari have teamed up to introduce this other program where we're installing and training people on the lab side of it, the farmers, to do their own processing to increase their margins and have less impact environmentally on our planet, of course, because if they can process thousands of pounds of hemp on their facility, they don't have to truck it somewhere, which saves on energy. When we get the water extraction going, we eliminate the dewinterization, takes a lot of energy, and several other processes, the drying process. And so the way that whole program is working is we'll come in, we'll set you up, and we'll take product in trade for the hardware you need and the training and the support. We also provide a field test kit that is basically an HPLC in the field, and it will give you your cannabinoid content. It'll measure the six main cannabinoids, CBD and THC, and then the carboxylated variants of those. They're, without going into all the science behind it, they're just another molecule. It's a bigger molecule, but they're still a cannabinoid molecule. And then it also gives you a rudimentary terpene profile. It gives you a content, a terpene content as well. The test unit only costs $5 a test. And so when you're processing, it's really nice to have that at your disposal. You can also go out and use this to test the flower of your crop so that you can get it at the optimum time to harvest. So you can follow it every week or every day right towards the end and know when it's the strongest. So testing is really a key thing in this business.
Seems like with everything going on, a lot of the people that's taken out their soy farms and their corn fields and going towards the hemp, they're trying to figure out how to navigate this very complex and precarious situation with laws and everything else. But this could be a lot of help to a lot of people that really don't know which way to turn, because it seems to be every way they're turning right now, everybody is wanting to take their money.
Right.
Or their crop or something, you know?
Right.
And it seems like the system you're talking about bypasses a lot of that, where they could do it on site.
It does. I mean, it does add an expense for the farmer, of course, but it's not as expensive as what they're doing now, which is the labs charge them. They're doing what they call a 50-50 deal. And so if I'm a hemp farmer and I grow 20,000 pounds and I take it to a lab, the lab keeps 10,000 pounds of my crop as payment for processing. Okay, so basically what we're doing is we're kind of following that same model, but we're saying to the farmer, look, we're going to come in and train you up and supply you with all the equipment you need to process it, to distill it yourself, and we're going to take biomass in payment or distillate as payment, but we're only going to take 15, maybe 20% of your crop instead of 50%, and we're only going to take it for 1 year, because at the end of that first year, you're going to own the lab, you're going to know how to do it, and we're going to be paid off. So right. Next year, you get 100% of your crop and you process it yourself.
Yeah, and I think most farmers, they're visionaries. They have to be.
Sure.
You know, because they're on large time scales. So looking forward, the out-of-the-pocket money that would come out would come back to you many, many, many times over.
Absolutely. And this is a growing industry. So most of the farmers I've talked to, they start off small, and then but they have a lot of land. And so, you know, maybe this year it's 10 acres, maybe next year it's 100 acres. So now they're going to need more processing equipment, and our whole goal is to have customers for life, so that as they grow, we grow with them, and we'll come back in next year. Maybe they need two more falling films or you know, whatever equipment they need. We'll supply it to them, if they need more training or new as new equipment comes out, as like our new ultrasonic extraction system. I mean, that's brand new to the market, and we really don't know how well it's going to work yet, but all indicators are that it's going to be, it's going to change the way we do this business.
Yeah, it sounds like it's pretty cutting edge too, because if the people up in Portland at the expo you went to, most of them just either didn't hear about it, or if they had heard about it, it's just a rudimentary knowledge about it.
It is, and I can tell you there was one guy that I did talk to there who was from another company, and I know we're on the right track, because what he told me was is they went to China recently, and they custom built, they had a Chinese company custom built an ultrasonic extractor that would do 400 gallons an hour. They're a much bigger company than we are, but obviously this is not a system that they're looking to market, and they're pretty hush-hush about it because I hadn't heard about it anywhere. But they are probably a bit ahead of us because they've already gotten this unit that our biggest unit will only, our biggest system will only do 250 liters per run, which you could do about 1,000 liters a day. You can do about 4 runs a day with that in an 8-hour shift. And that's probably pushing it, but we're on the right, we're on the right track here.
Well, the first people that gets into this, one of the things that would come along as a person in this business is you could undercut a lot of your competition. And that would really roll out your product so you can keep on doing what you're doing best, you know.
Exactly. And that's what we're trying to do. Of course, we've got to finance the initial term to get our biomass. And it's going to get tricky, but we're pretty confident we can do it. We have financing in place already for the initial phase. And then we're working on the more long-term financing that will really launch it for us. Because even though, you know, you're still talking a couple of $100,000 to set everything up for a system that will do 1,000 pounds a day.
Well, so, with a proven system, once it gets a track record, now we're talking about if you wanted to go to the bank.
Sure.
You know, it would be financeable. So once again, let's tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Okay, yeah, well, you can go to our website, sanarisamart.com, which is www.sanaresmart.com. What you're going to find there is you can sign up for a distributorship there for our products, which is all of the Sanari products. Sanari, by the way, means to heal in Italian. And so the name of our company is To Heal Smartly, basically. Sanarismart.com does not have much on our new alignment with Moxie and this installing the labs and all of that. The best way, if you're interested in finding out more on that, is to call us and ask for me, and I can give you a rundown on that. I have some brochures and stuff that we can send you. I will be updating the Sanari website. We just haven't decided on what structure we're going to use as far as the marketing arm of that process goes. You can email me through the website. Daryl@sanarismart.com is my email. You can email me there. And that's basically how to get a hold of us.
Well, let's see if we can take this to the next level, Daryl.
All right.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Here we are at the end of another great interview with Daryl Piero of Sanari Smart. And at the end of this interview, I actually had a really nice film clip of Osho, what he was talking about as far as the mind and the heart. But believe it or not, Osho International blocked it because of copyright, which is strange. Stop and think about this. If I put up a quote or a talk by anybody, say we had a recording of Jesus, and I put it up, and the National Baptist Institution says, no, we have that copyrighted. How can you copyright a person talking about waking up, and the people that are copywriting it are holding it back from the public unless they put it out? This is strange for me. You know, my wife and I, we were part of Osho commune years and years ago, and we've seen little by little this taking place, where an organization, once they take hold and turn it into something else, and actually Osho even warned everybody about, he says, here's what's going to happen, and it's happening. And it happens every single time. It doesn't matter if it's Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, Osho, Bhagavan, anybody. It keeps happening. And this is why we have to stay really close and up close and personal and keep on pushing this envelope. So right now I'm going to tell you how to get to that talk. If you go to YouTube, put in Mind, Heart, Osho. It'll pull it up. And then you can play the Osho International clip. But what it's about, and actually Osho doesn't get into this, but it points to it. What he's talking about is the mind has become the master, when in reality it should be the servant. And the heart is actually the master. But by being sort of apathetic and truly just knowing actually that any time it could speak up and take the mastership away from the mind, it hasn't done anything. And this directly relates to our society, our civilization, globally, internationally, nationally, locally. This is happening all over. All of the good people, the heartfelt people, the people that make decisions based upon a feeling they get of, is this right or wrong? Not politically up to somebody's agenda, but is it right or wrong? This is the main thing to go by. But what we've done is we've let the mind, the whatever you want to call them, the cabal, the deep state, the Illuminati, whatever suits your fancy, we've set back and we've let the crazies basically take over the asylum. And now here we are today, the people with heart are waking up to this and going, maybe we should get up off the couch and start being more proactive in what's going on in the world. Because these people are making decisions for us that don't have our best interest at heart. And I think once we get started and really start getting into this, we will realize that we need a heartfelt civilization. We need to start making decisions based upon the heart. Sure, some logic, some mind can come in and temper it, get all the nuts and bolts straight and all the logistics straight. But the basic decision has to be based upon heartfelt moral decisions. And even our morality has been taken over and captured by the mind. And you can almost moralistically justify anything anymore. War, doesn't matter. Abortion, it doesn't matter. There, you can go for it or against it, according what the local political agenda is. And just like what's going on with the wall right now, whether the wall is right or wrong, leaving that out of it, go back in time and you can see all the people that are truly against this wall, they were fighting for a wall just a few years ago. And they put up hundreds of millions of dollars for a wall in the Middle East. Their reasoning doesn't make sense, except it is political. It's a political thing. And if you can get past the politics, then we could start talking about what is right or wrong. And realizing also that we don't live in a perfect world. Our world is not perfect. And sometimes we like to make decisions based upon that. And it sounds good until you start bringing it into practice. I mean, there's decisions being made right now. There's a mayor of Dallas. He felt sorry for the poor homeless people and the poverty-stricken people, so he made a law. And guess what it was? He made a law that you could steal up to $750 worth of merchandise, and it's not breaking the law. Well, guess what that caused? That caused a whole armada of thieves to get together and strategically plot and plan going into every place, Sears and Penny's and wherever, and stealing $500 or $600 worth, if they could get out of the store and not get caught, it's theirs, home free. They're, even if they get their picture and ID and everything, if they can get it into a bag and get out of the store where the they cannot get them and hold on to them because they can't arrest them, all they could do is get them and get the merchandise back. Then they just go and try again. That's ridiculous. Seattle. Look at Seattle. The police. Here's another good YouTube. Go to YouTube and put in Seattle is dying. And you'll see that the police and a lot of the local representatives are speaking up because what they did there to solve the drug problem and not realizing it's not so much a drug problem, it's a homeless problem. To solve the drug problem and all the rest, because they would arrest people with drugs and they maybe stay overnight 2 days at the most, you know, if it was on a Friday or something. So what they did is made it legal to have 3 grams of drugs or less. If you have less than 3 grams, it's not against the law. And the police are trying to tell them, look, the drug dealers aren't imbeciles. They're not complete morons. All they do is sit over in a car or a van and they give their runners less than 3 grams to go out and sell them. Then they come back and get some more and go out and sell them. And if they go out and they have less than 3 grams and they get popped, they're not arrested. They're just saying, okay, just stop doing this anymore. Virtually, they made drugs legal. And they're doing these decisions based upon helping poverty-stricken people. This isn't helping them by getting them more and more high or giving them permission to go out and steal. This is not helping poverty people and homeless people. And there's systems out there waiting in line to help people, but we're just simply not doing it. And even getting into the CBD thing and the medical marijuana, they keep running us around and around and around, and all they're doing is buying time so the big corporations can come in, pharmaceuticals come in. They're going to learn how to completely dismantle this whole system right in front of our eyes before we even know it. You wait and see. They're going to take it over. So here we are, you know, at the end of another interview. And I tell you, I'm going to have to go out and interview some other people on these subjects that we're talking about. One interview I want to do is about screens or poison. And this is an interesting little thing. In Silicon Valley, where all of the wealthy software people and hardware people, and Apple and Google and all these people, they have kids. Well, guess where their kids go to school? Waldorf schools. Guess what they don't allow in Waldorf schools? They don't allow any flat screens, no iPhones, no cell phones, no iPads, no computers. They do all their work with pencil and pen and paper, chalkboards, and the old school way. Why do they do this? Because the very people that design all of this equipment, I'm doing this interview right now on an iPhone, but we're surrounded by technology. The very people that design all this stuff and force it on us, really totally convince people that aren't really thinking that they have to have a new iPhone every 8 months or 10 months. They have to have a new iPad, and they fix it to where the software doesn't really work with the older equipment, so you have to upgrade. At the same time, they're forcing this on us and our young people and actually giving the stuff to schools. They're not letting their kids even close to this. And you say, well, surely they wouldn't do that. But stop and think about it. Do you think the people that worked for Philip Morris Tobacco Company, do you think that they gave their kids cigarettes when they were like little kids, could barely walk? We give our kids cell phones to play with. This is acclimating them. And this isn't even getting into what flat screens can do to your mind. And this is something I've been personally thinking about, and I still have to validate it. But I venture to say, if you spend your life looking at a two-dimensional flat screen, it's going to decrease the way you think and in the way you process three-dimensional worlds and reality, like geometry. Imagine trying to do geometry if you're only thinking in two dimensions. It just, you would be constantly pressing your mind to do this. But the rich, wealthy elites, they know all of this, and they're preparing their children. And another thing we could get into, but I don't have time to do too much right now, is what's going on in genetics with gene splicing and using the CRISPR. They know how to completely reorganize genetics, the genome, to have smarter kids. Do you think this is not going to change things on a massive level? Right now, the difference we have between social orders is pretty much regulated by bloodline and wealth, mostly wealth. Imagine now if they start, because it's only going to be the rich people that do this, imagine if they start having smarter kids, like exponentially smarter than all the rest. The social disparity between those two groups is going to get wider and wider and wider. And you think that people that are living in poverty right now and living embedded into the system are in financial slavery? You wait till they get to the point to where they can't even imagine or think about the systems that's controlling them. It's coming. And I think we can stay on top of it because, once again, if we can get people to think with their heart more than their mind, and this gets back also to there's parables about this, like the householder. When the master comes to the door, if the household is out of order, if the cook is doing the gardening's doing the cleaning, everybody's doing different jobs, the master will just go away. The master being that part of our being that can enlighten us, bring us into consciousness. It's our job to put the house in order, whether it's as an individual or whether it's globally. We need to put the house in order where everybody's doing the right job. The heartfelt people should be doing the heartfelt jobs. The mind should be subservient to those heart decisions. There's a lot to this, and I hope you really keep tuning back into my channel. And you can always go to our Facebook. I have a Facebook, which is facebook.com/lotusguide. And there's also /Rahasya Po, or Rahasya Uncensored, sorry. And you can go to our website, which is lotusguide.com. And we just opened up a center here in Paradise. So stay in touch. We're on the move. We're getting out there, and we're going to try to bring you some really good information. Thank you so much for listening. Been lost.